Welcome into the FWFB Football Podcast. You can find us at friendswithfantasybenefits.com or at Fantasy Benefits on Twitter. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. Along with me tonight is Peter Howard at PA Howdy on Twitter. Peter writes for DLF Football, does some work with FF Statistics, and I was also on the Dino Crossroads podcast, a newer podcast there. So how you doing tonight, Peter?
I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me on. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, glad you can make some time for us tonight. A little last-minute invitation to you, and you were kind enough to oblige.
No, I am always doing nothing, so I'm always happy to jump on if anyone... I've always got time for you, man, so that's fine.
that helps explain, you know, where you have time to crunch so many statistics.
Yeah, you're just saving me for more of that, to be honest with you.
So, if you're not aware, on Twitter, you can get a whole host of stuff from Peter. He's a very statistically minded person, puts out great stuff, shares plenty of analysis and data that a lot of people would probably charge for. So that's very much appreciated. And you guys who do like seeing statistics, Pete does a great job at trying to get some edges in the football world, which can be hard to do.
Now you tell me I could have been making money at this. Now it's a little late in the game at this point, but no.
Never too late. All right, so tonight we're going to talk about targets. Volatility and vacated targets. That's kind of the theme. Later on, we're going to have our round 14 toss up for Kenny Golladay, and then, as always, wrap up with a sleeper from everyone. But jumping in here with targets, you know, it used to be, you know, people didn't understand targets well enough. You know, you just look at the counting stats, the catches, the touchdowns, things like that. And, you know, targets weren't really on people's radar. And these days, you know, most fantasy football players are getting pretty savvy, and they've come to understand targets is really where it's at. You need to locate consistent target share to be able to project volume and year-to-year consistency. Yeah. You know, there's guys like Antonio Brown out there who are always going to have an immense amount of targets. There's not really challenges to their target share any given year. But there's plenty of situations coming into 2018 here, new coaching, player personnel turnover, rookies, things like that, that are going to definitely play factors into who gets how many targets. Yeah. So the first team that I had in mind to look at is the LA Rams. Interesting, you know, they had a new coach last season in Sean McVay, did wonders for an offense that had been the worst in the league, pretty much. Wasn't a high volume attack, which is kind of surprising when you see an offense succeed in the NFL. You tend to think that they were, you know, probably volume based, but not an over abundance for the Rams last season, only 970 plays. So, you know, there's not a ton of targets to go around. You got a new cook in the kitchen and Brandon Cooks. Sammy Watkins has departed. Tavon Austin has departed as well. So the big question is, will Cooks be able to get the amount of targets he needs to be, you know, third round, fourth round value, which is typically where he's going off the board, and what's left over there for the other two guys in Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. So I'll let you open up on this one, because on previous podcasts, I've let my Brandon Cooks opinions fly. So you go ahead and give us your unadulterated opinion on the
Rams. My best. Yeah, I don't know if you're... You know, I've been doing player projections for Roto Underworld as well this season for their world famous draft kit, quotation mark. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm going to start, really. I've actually got Robert Woods leading the team in targets this year. I'm not particularly high on Robert Woods like a lot of people, but when you look at what happened last year and as it broke down, it just seems more likely that he's set to at least get the early opportunity to lead the team in targets. Between week 9 and week 13, he never got less than 6 targets. And he's still got 85 targets. And he was also getting slightly more valuable targets as well when you consider where he was getting them. Cooper Kupp's getting a lot of shorter depth of targets as well. So Robert Woods was just getting a more valuable role as well. I got to stop saying as well, dude, or the people are going to get really bored of that phrase. but yeah, that's where I am. I really like Brandon Cooks as a player. I think he's undervalued because I value players that have proven to be consistently really good at football, and that's what Brandon Cooks has done. And they've also just signed him to a long-term deal, ending his wandering ways, I guess, where he's been getting shipped around a bit there.
Yeah, I mean, they got him in camp. They got a look at the wheels and everything under the hood with Cooks, and they said, let's lock this guy up, which yeah. I think is a positive sign Definitely. For his target share. He only needs about 115 targets to be his usual productive self. He's never been a big volume target guy. It's usually around 110 to 120. Even though there's limited targets to go around, I my personal opinion is there's enough for Cooks. He's the wide receiver one on the team. Robert Woods is right there 1A. And he'll get targets as well. Robert Woods gets hurt every year. He's going to miss 2-3 games, most likely, and that'll bump up Cooks in a couple of games.
Yeah, and I think it's easy. For me, Brandon Cooks is easily the most talented wide receiver on this team. I wasn't a big fan of Cooper Kupp coming out, but, kind of just have to swallow that one because he's proven to be effective in the NFL, so I have to give it up. And so it is a bit of a quagmire in terms of target share, but the real problem is just based on what they've done over the last 3 years. I do a weighted average of pass attempts over the last 3 years, and then you take the situation into account and you weight them based on that. And I'm not projecting them to be any more of a high passing game than they were last year, and that's kind of the problem. So I can easily get him over 90 targets playing a split role with Cooks and Woods, but he struggles somewhat with necessary volume, definitely to be a wide receiver one. But I don't know, at this point, it's kind of hard to bet against Cooks getting at least over 1,000 yards because he's done it for 3 years in a row with three different teams. So, Jared Goff is probably a bit of a downgrade in terms of quarterback, but he did improve last year. Everyone's excited about the team. In terms of fantasy, my problem with Brandon Cooks right now is people like the Rams, and now they're higher on Goff than they were last year. And I think that bakes in at a certain value. I don't think we're getting a great big value drop just because he's in this more difficult to project target share. Otherwise, I'd be all on the Brandon Cooks train, to be honest.
Yeah, and their schedule looks to be a little more difficult this year, where they didn't have that many games where they had to really fight. They seemed like they were winning a lot of games and just either handing off or dumping off to Todd Gurley, which is another target share that could come down if it's not the right game script. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting spot because everybody's pretty high on the Rams and Gurley, a lot of the receivers, not so much on Goff. He's maybe a little overdrafted at the moment, but I don't think anybody's going to sell the farm for Jared.
Yeah,
Goff,
I think that's you're describing it perfectly. It's just no one's overvalued at the same time, everyone is expecting something. It's hard to really know where anyone's going to break what their ADP is right now. So they're all kind of in this value range. Apart from Gurley.
Yep. Yeah, I've got all the Cook shares I need, so I'm trying to dial it back a little bit. I'm not letting him get out of the fourth round. If I'm up and it's the fourth round, I'm generally taking Brandon Cooks unless I have to go running back.
You're talking more dynasty here, or is it strictly...
Best balls. Right now I'm drafting best balls. I mean, we talk everything, redraft and best ball, a little dynasty.
But. Yeah, I love him in dynasty because I always take that proven production, man. He's been efficient. He's been efficient in three different systems now and productive with it as well. So I think he can sometimes, be a great target in dynasty. I don't know where he's going in best ball right now. Do you know?
Yeah, generally the fourth round, you know, sometimes slip into the fifth. So, you know, I think he could easily be drafted at the end of the second round if he has his typical season with, you know, 6 touchdowns, 1,000 yards, and however many catches that translates into in the Rams offense, probably about 70, 75.
Yeah, I've got him coming in around there. I guess my problem, especially in best ball, is if his role, this is the other thing I find interesting about targets. Maybe we'll get into it better with the other teams, but I think the player owns their targets. They own where they get those targets and they own how many targets they earn. And so I've got Brandon Cooks coming in around those numbers because of the type of player he has been. I'm starting to believe that's the type of player he is. And so he's great for best ball, but then you've got other players that I think are going to have a similar role, like a lot lower down. Even Tyrell Williams has been operating in a similar role to Cooks, and you can get him a lot later. So I guess that's my only problem with Brandon. I mean, I want Cooks. I just don't know I'm willing to pay for it.
Gotcha. Yeah, that seems to be the prevailing opinion. So I'm kind of out on the ledge here. We'll see how it plays out.
I'd love for it to work out, man.
All right, let's shift gears to the Minnesota Vikings. You know, not much has changed in their depth chart. The changes at offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo coming in there, replacing Pat Shurmur. I don't expect a wide divergence from their prior offense. I think they're still going to run the ball a lot. They'll have a very good defense. That kind of limits, you know, the amount of attempts that like Kirk Cousins can have and the target shares to go around for Thielen and Diggs. And you know, their only real new face would be Kendall Wright in the slot, which could bump Adam Thielen out more into the outside role. What's your take between Diggs and Thielen, though, Peter? Do you think they're kind of, you know, neck and neck, or is there a guy that you have a preference for target-wise?
Yeah, teams need to start spreading the wealth a little bit. There are too many teams with, like, some of my favorite receivers in the same depth chart, and this is, like, the case. Both Diggs and Thielen are just really good players. If anyone's wondering if Thielen's, like, a temporary wonder. He's not. He's been really good. Like, really, really good. Typically, that would mean I would be all in Thielen. I'd be drafting him as a top 12 wide receiver. I'd be arguing that undrafted free agents matter and target shares tell us about the player and everything else. But Diggs himself is a little low down in the draft capital argument, which means I like him more anyway. That's just a thing. And he has been the only player I've seen this broken down, probably everyone has, in so many different ways. I don't know which is the best way of saying it. Like in reception perception, from Matt Harmon all the way to just out and out efficiency in terms of racer and air yards and Frisco Josh, the only player Stefon Diggs really compares to in the metrics of matter for measuring how good a player is Antonio Brown. And that's just not a comparison I can ignore. He's suffered from injuries, but I think injuries come and go. I try not to weigh them more than that. I mean, I'm not a doctor, and I'm certainly not going to become one before the 2018 season. So I can't tell you if there's some kind of genetic condition that makes Stefon Diggs doomed to only play 8 or 9 games every season. Enough with me complaining about it. The way I have it broken down is I project that Stefon Diggs is going to play 16 games or closer to it this year. And with that level of efficiency, I just can't imagine he doesn't become the target leader. And if he does that, then Stefon Diggs is a top 12 wide receiver. And there's really no other way. If he plays 16 games and outside of something drastic, like, no, nothing. His efficiency is pretty much baked in at this point. So if he plays, he's a top 12 wide receiver, and he's someone you definitely want on your team, no matter what the format. And on the other hand, I really like Adam Thielen, too.
Yeah, I mean, they're going right there, you know, at the beginning of the third, it seems like Thielen tends to be the preference from the best balls I've seen. Haven't really done any redraft yet, but you know, I think it's a matter of preference for, you know, do you want a little more safety in a guy like Thielen, who's, you know, he could play the outside more, but he works the inside of the field, plays the slot. He'll get his snaps there as well. And he's probably going to have more targets, less touchdowns versus Diggs, who's kind of that outside threat, the guy that can score big touchdowns.
What I'd say is I've been really looking at Jacob Brickrode. I always look at Jacob Brickrode's stuff. He's phenomenal. But he's actually got it as his pinned tweet at the moment. I don't tend to project or even assume that a team can produce two top 24 wide receivers. It just seems like an outlier. It's always a different team. Unless it's Peyton Manning, you can't rely on it. But right. What he's got as a pinned tweet at the moment is if you're not projecting four teams in the NFL to have two top 24 wide receivers, then you're probably doing it wrong. And that's because pretty much every year there's either four or more teams with two top 24 wide receivers. And thinking about it that way, it makes me a lot more comfortable with Thielen and Diggs. If the two players I think are going to be in the top 24 very comfortably, if they play a whole season, that's them. It's Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. So I don't think you can really go wrong. Also, I think it's flipped in Dynasty ADP. Everyone likes Diggs more, I guess, because we overvalue age too much. But I will take whichever one is
kind of a shinier toy.
Right. I'll take whichever one's cheaper, and I will be just happy. I'll just smile all season having either one on my team, to be honest with you.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they have a good amount of plays. The problem is that a lot of their total plays are rushing plays. You know, that they, if everything's going right in Minnesota, they're running the ball, you know, approaching 50% of the time, which is more than anybody. And when you have a defense like that, you can do that. So
I like your deep,
the attempt.
I like your point about the defense. I like your point about the defense. It's not something I always remember, and they have a phenomenal defense that should do better next year as well. But something I also did just recently, I recently listened to Evan Silver on a podcast, and I forget which one it was. It might've been them. It might have been the Fantasy Feast. It could be anything, let's face it. But he was talking about being worried about Dalvin Cook because of Latavius Murray's red zone usage. And if they're splitting it up that way, that doesn't necessarily mean more passing opportunities, but it means that the wide receivers still might be better targets for this offense. And so that was interesting, too. I think Diggs and Thielen have done enough at this point to prove they're going to earn sufficient enough targets to be top 24 wide receivers. So outside of that, I'm not too concerned about the volume.
Yeah, I'm on the same page there. If I can get either of them in the third, especially the later half, I'm happy. All right, let's stick in the NFC North and talk Detroit Lions.
Okay.
Interesting coaching change here. You've got Jim Bob Cooter staying on as the offensive coordinator for Matt Patricia, new head coach and defensive coach. The depth chart isn't really shook up much. The only question mark there is Kenny Golladay, you know, is going to be healthy for an entire season. So Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, out of those two, Jones is the guy who's got probably the biggest risk to lose fantasy production to Kenny Golladay. They kind of profile similarly, you know, touchdown kind of specialists, big play guys. Golden Tate's going to do his thing, work the slot. He's one of the best in the middle of the field, gets open, runs routes well. So I don't think there's too much of a risk for his production. You know, Jones was going really early in best balls for a bit, but he's starting to slide a little bit, and Kenny Golladay is coming on, and we're going to talk Kenny Golladay later on, obviously, but just from a target perspective, you have any expectations of what this Detroit wide receiver core is going to look like?
Yeah, a lot. I was really into Marvin Jones early because my first thought was, here's a receiver who suddenly jumped into the top 12 that wasn't getting the value bump. Frankly, people weren't as excited about him as I thought they should be. But working on targets specifically and looking at it again for this podcast, because I was nervous, Marvin Jones is like the only top 12 wide receiver without a 20% target share on his own team. He actually had about 19%, So unless he gets more targets, it's hard to say that he'll stay at that level. It is. And I still really like him, but he needs more targets. And like you say, Golden Tate is not someone who deserves to lose targets. He's efficient. He's good at what he does. He's always been, since he's been on this team, he's always been a target leader. He's had 21, 23, and 21% of the target share the last 3 years. So I don't think it's going anywhere unless suddenly, you know, that yak ability disappears or something. Kenny Golladay is also someone I really like coming in. He's an older prospect, but he dominated his team's college market share at two different levels of competition. In his first year, when he moved up in level of competition, he was still targeted heavily for that new level of competition. So I actually really liked him coming in. But again, it's this quagmire of three players I like on the same depth chart. I've got Golden Tate leading the team with 21% and Marvin Jones falling back to 18%. That probably makes him more of a top 24 receiver than a top 12 receiver next season. And unfortunately, I just don't see a way it can happen for Kenny Golladay without an injury.
Right. Yeah, one of the big question marks for Detroit in my head is what's the split between rushing and passing going to look like? Jim Bob Cooter seems to have a preference for short passing with efficiency. That was the staple of the offense the last season and a half under him. But how much of that was maybe Jim Caldwell? You know, Jim Caldwell's kind of a big tub of vanilla when it comes to risk taking, in my opinion. So, you know, maybe JBC is given a little more freedom by Matt Patricia. They do want to run the ball, I think, a little bit more. They drafted a running back. They signed a running back. They've got a whole stable of failed running backs. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if Matt Patricia learned from Bill Belichick this lesson in let your personnel determine how you attack on offense, or if he looked at it and said, I want to run the ball because that was what Bill Belichick liked to do. It's going to be one of those things that's going to unfold over the course of the season. So we've got no idea until it's already happened. I think, you know, obviously they didn't run the ball too much in prior years. I think that changes. They're below 40% in each of the last three seasons, which is, you know, the bottom of the league typically. I think they at least get into the low 40s. But I wonder if they're also going to run more plays, because that's another thing that I could see Jim Caldwell having kind of put a little bit of a restriction on, where Patricia came up under Belichick, who saw that running a lot of plays is a valuable thing to do and allowed his offensive coordinator to do it. So I think they've got the personnel to do it. I think Stafford could run a little bit of hurry up. And you know, they could see a fairly large jump in total number of plays, which spreads more value to everyone.
Yeah, and I think that's really good assessment. I expect them to still be more pass heavy than run heavy. However, I am really interested in Kerryon Johnson as someone not getting so much of the rookie bump. I think he's the best chance of actually really establishing a running game that Detroit has had for a while. But yeah, I think coaching can also be really overvalued in terms of who gets targets and how many. I just think Marvin Jones and Golden Tate and even Kenny Golladay, or not just yet, but still, again, have established themselves as players that demand targets. I think more so than the coaching or even the quarterback, who's certainly, you know, there's nothing wrong with Matt Stafford at all. He's definitely a very above average NFL quarterback. But I'm not so worried about the coaching affecting the number of passes or number of runs. If anything, I would say if Kerryon Johnson can really get going, that might turn them into more of a balanced team, more of a run team. But even then, you know, success in the running game can still go hand in hand with the level of targets Golden Tate and Marvin Jones has had. So I know, I guess I look at it a little sideways, but I'm not so worried about that, to be honest.
Yeah, and Kerryon Johnson's interesting. He's about 30 picks cheaper than Royce Freeman in Denver, and they're kind of identical situations. Like, we don't know if they're going to be good NFL running backs. I was saying this on Twitter. Like, they're kind of, you know, they're not all-star athletes. They're solid, but a little bit more of a lunch pailer. They're in a crowded backfield. You know, they've got some draft capital tied up in them, and people are going nuts for Royce Freeman, thinking like he's the clear cut guy. And, you know, if you're going to give me Kerryon Johnson 30 picks later, sure, I'll easily take him.
Even Ronald Jones, or his situation compares similarly to a lot of these rookie running backs. You know, the season's coming, it's time to get excited about some of these players and some of these rookies, and Kerryon Johnson's got just as good a chance. And like you say, athleticism matters, but even then, I mean, you need a borderline level of athleticism, and Johnson fits that mark, and he was a three-down player in school.
Right.
I mean, not that Detroit's given anyone any confidence that they can actually establish a run game, but why not? Why not Kerryon Johnson? We got excited about Amir Abdullah, and
All right. Yeah, they invested in a new center in the draft. They should get their tackle back, their left tackle. So their offensive line should be a little better. Maybe that'll help. And if they can stick with a guy,
right,
for a change, let's see. All right, let's switch conferences, go over to the AFC for a little bit. Kansas City Chiefs are interesting to me. They brought in Sammy Watkins, but there's not a lot of targets to go around. Albert Wilson's not with the Chiefs anymore. He vacated about 62 targets. Problem on the Chiefs is they don't run very many plays to begin with. They're typically around 950 total plays, and they run the ball at league average, like 43%, you know, and they get the tight ends involved heavily. So all these things are just pulling at the target share for wide receivers. Is there enough to go around for Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins to be productive, Peter?
Yeah, throw me all the easy ones. Why don't you? We got a brand new quarterback that, you know, could be, you know, the next top five stud, or like with all players that we haven't seen play enough, he could be a complete bust. We just don't know yet. I think the most interesting way to look at Mahomes is he could be Alex Smith 2017, right? He's got the skill set, he's got the draft capital, the team clearly believes in him. They went up to get him, and then they traded away they're slightly overpriced, but still established veteran quarterback. And I think all of those are positive signs. And when the team, especially with Andy Reid, has made such a big play, it's tended to have worked out, right? I mean, if we're going to have faith in some coaches over others, I think Andy Reid's established themselves as a guy who, when he makes a big bet like that, it tends to work out. So I got a lot of hope.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you bring up that he could be Alex Smith 2017. Yeah, right. That's actually the argument I made on this podcast. We had Jake Seeley on. We're in the same Scott Fishbowl league, and I took Pat Mahomes very, very early. I took him QB7 because I didn't think he was getting back to me, and you know, I wanted him kind of as a, you know, put my brand on him a little bit early on in this season. You know, for me, all the QBs were kind of the same in that next, you know, four or five quarterback range. So I said Alex Smith's 2017 is not that, the numbers aren't that unreachable. You know, it's not this amazing, you know, Tom Brady 2007 season.
It was unusual for Alex Smith.
You know,
that's what it was.
Right. And he was the QB4. He was good. But you know, I don't think they're.
Yeah, I've actually been tracking this offseason opportunity loss from each team. Like you said, they lost some targets with Albert Wilson, who's doing extremely efficient work with those targets. Mm-hmm. He's one of the more efficient racist targets. Anyway, that's a different team now. But they've lost about 499 air yards with everyone they've lost this year. And that's interesting. They actually come out fairly low in terms of compared to every other team and the amount of targets and air yards and market share they've lost. But the thing about lost from last season is it's not really consistent year to year. Like what they've lost doesn't always get replaced. But like you said, and you're doing with concentrating on targets tend to be pretty stable. Tyreek Hill is another one of those players that burnt me because I got him wrong. I didn't believe a player that unproductive in college was going to do it. It's really rare. And any year that Tyreek Hill gets 800 yards or more, he's going to continue to put a dent in an otherwise very impressive graph. Okay, my graph was beautiful, and he just keeps putting this nasty little dent in it. But still, whatever. He's proven it, so that's good. And he's proven himself to be a dynamic player, but also a good player down the field that deserves targets. Sammy Watkins has struggled, but he definitely has at least had the skill set at one point, right? And certainly the draft capital and the team's gone out to look for him. And Kareem Hunt, I mean, you couldn't hope for a more promising run game to really wrap around a rookie quarterback to give him some safety. And, you know, Travis Kelce speaks for himself. So,
Would you be that surprised if Sammy Watkins got more targets than Tyreek Hill this season?
I would not. I was starting to get on the Tyreek Hill bandwagon after swearing I would never do that on, you know, the graves of all everyone in Valhalla. Honestly, it was then going and getting Sammy Watkins that really gave me pause, because there's someone else to believe in slightly. But either way, both players average an incredibly deep depth of target for their career. So they're both going to provide, I mean, it's insane, actually. The average depth of target for Patrick Mahomes, this strong arm quarterback, is phenomenal. Tyreek Hill has like a 15.4 average depth of target, and everyone else is over 12, right? So I don't know if they're just going to open it up and just become an air raid offense like we haven't seen in a very long time or not. But how I have it right now is Tyreek Hill winning out for targets, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him switch, to answer your question.
Yeah, I would say that's the smart money, but I think everybody's kind of cemented Tyreek Hill into their, you know, their draft board, and it's not that undoable that Watkins could be as many or not even more targets. Now, I don't think he'd be as productive. Tyreek Hill is extremely efficient with his targets. When you're that kind of athlete, you tend to be. So that's an interesting one to see. And wide receiver didn't seem like their biggest need, and they went out and got a real difference maker. So,
yeah, definitely. And targets project targets. I don't, especially target share, even more so. And that's something I've been writing up in some when wide receivers and when running backs break out article. Sorry. As the further into a career you get, the more their target share the season before projects their target share in the next season. Now, it's not perfect,
right?
Because there's still a lot of there. It's the NFL. Nothing really gets over a 6 point. I was going to get all technical there and talk about math that I don't fully understand, but I work as hard as I can to keep up with, which is R squared. It's just,
it would be lost on me, Peter. When Josh and you guys are going into the statistical world, I'm kind of like, can someone explain to Dum Dum over here?
I'm just running as fast as I can in place to keep up most of the time. But target share carries over year to year more than anything else. So more than yards, more than targets in and of itself. And so Tyreek Hill, having done that last year, it was only 1 year, and there tends to be the biggest jump between year one and year two. But still, it's just where you have to put your money if you're relying on what targets, the trends are, right? So that's why I've got Hill leading. And like I say, I wouldn't be surprised that Sammy Watkins finally has a healthy season and comes back to what he was in college or something like that. But at this point, Tyreek Hill's done too much that I have to begrudgingly offer well-deserved respect and say, man, this thing the team's going to keep up his usage.
All right. So let's stick in the AFC West here. Talk about the Oakland Raiders. There's some new faces. Got John Gruden coming in to coach, Bill Musgrave, new offensive coordinator. They brought in Jordy Nelson. They brought in Martavius Bryant via trade, though we're not sure he wasn't on the field today, the first day of training camp. There's possibly a suspension looming with the NFL's unique brand of justice. We have no idea what that's going to equate to. And, you know, right now I'm just not touching him, you know, because he's – This is second or third strike with, depending what it is, and he may be out the entire season. So, in a best ball, I don't want to already be drawing dead. you know, if we get some kind of confirmation that he's going to play, then we'll see. But even then, he's not a very efficient receiver. He's kind of a big play guy. Amari Cooper should dominate this target share, but you know, Jordy Nelson is a really intriguing prospect this offseason. With there's a lot of people who say he's not done. There's a lot of people who say he's cooked. You know, you brought up Josh Hermsmeyer and airyards.com. The game speed on Jordy Nelson still looks good. You know, he's maybe, you know, lost straight line speed, but he runs well enough. If you overlay him and Amari Cooper, there's not much difference. You know, Cooper a little bit at the top end. And if you overlay Jordy and Michael Crabtree, who he's kind of replacing, it's near identical. So I don't agree with people who say he's probably lost a step. I think he's going to still be his typical self, where he can get open, run really efficient routes. The question is, will he get targets in an offense we know absolutely nothing about? Any insight there?
Yeah. It's a really interesting team. Again, just throwing me all the easy ones here. Yeah, I've got Amari Cooper leading the team.
You see why my other guest canceled, Peter.
That's what it was. I knew there must be a reason. No, that's fine. I'm enjoying myself. It's good. what can I say? Amari Cooper is going to lead in targets. He's just, I'm betting on last year to be the outlier for him, right? The 2 years before that and every year before that in college, he was this dominant wide receiver. I think he's going to do that again next year. And so that even makes him a slight value where he's going. Mm-hmm. I think he's in the fourth round or so as well. Jordy Nelson, I've heard a lot of calls for him being a value in himself because, like you say, everyone's giving up. He's older. Everyone's scared of everyone over 30. So they'll probably be surprised most of us commentating on it are also over 30 and calling them old. But and I love the game speed and everything Josh Hermsmeyer does is fantastic. Not everything. Like, I haven't watched him in his house or anything. But
more creepy. I've seen him eat a pizza in under 10 minutes, and that was awesome. That was pretty damn impressive.
Right? Yeah. Everything he does on AYards.com is something you should pay attention to. And the thing that worries me about that is it's like efficiency. Sometimes receivers will dip before they stop producing, right? And sometimes they actually go up before they stop producing. I've actually found nothing that really can indicate, and not that it doesn't exist, I just, in my, you know, small world, haven't yet found it, of what can indicate when a play is actually finished. But that also means there's nothing to say that he is finished either. So I think you're right that he might be getting undervalued here. I've got him having a very significant target share. Like, I expect him to get over 90 targets next year. And like you say, he's an efficient player. True, he had, you know, the special connection with Aaron Rodgers or whatever, but I still think he in and of himself is a good player. He's going to get a decent number of targets and he's going to do stuff with them. Honestly, what I'm mostly doing with Oakland is I'm targeting Derek Carr as like a dark horse, maybe have his first top 12 season. Mm-hmm. At a cost that doesn't matter if he doesn't happen to, right? that's mostly right. Where I'm going with these targets. I think Amari Cooper is going to lead. I think he's going to be a wide receiver one again next year. And Jordy Nelson is going to surprise, I think, honestly, everyone who's scared of 30-year-olds. And Derek Carr might prove to be a value if both of them do that.
Right. And a lot's really going to come down to what happens with Martavius Bryant, because if Bryant's healthy, you figure he's going to get 14-15% of the target share. That would probably equate to about 75 targets. He goes away, you know, the next guy on the depth chart, Seth Roberts, I doubt he's going to see 75 targets. He's probably capped at around 50 or 60. You know, Jordy goes from 100 targets to 120. So that's, you know, that's a not night and day, but that's a huge boost and moves him from where we're getting him right now in the ninth round to like the sixth round.
Right. Sorry. You took me. I forgot that. Yeah. Derek Carr loves his Seth Roberts though, man. Every now and again, someone will mention Martavius Bryant. I'm like, oh yeah, God, that guy. Like, I've just forgotten it. And you know, it's a really good point. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a good fantasy weapon. I just don't, but you know, one play here or there can do a lot for a team. Which feeds into the Derek Carr idea. But yeah, I guess so. Yeah, who knows? I'm rooting for him. I root for every player to do well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see him suspended. He's a talented player, but he just seems to not be able to find his way at the moment. All right, sticking with the AFC, another new coaching situation. Got the Tennessee Titans, Mike Vrabel coming in as the new head coach, Matt LaFleur coming over as the offensive coordinator. He's out of the Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan coaching tree. So it's not a clear-cut picture what that offense is going to look like. I don't think you can just say, you know, it's going to look like McVay's offense or it's going to look like Shanahan's offense, but somewhere in that ballpark. And I think that means good things for the Titans. I think it means good things for Marcus Mariota and all other wide receivers. And I actually was over on Sharp Football Stats today looking at the percentage of personnel packages that each team ran last season. And one thing that really stood out to me was the Rams ran a ton of three wide receiver sets in the 80s. The percentage was in the 80s. So really, a lot higher than most teams that are like in the 60s, 70s for some of the higher teams. And then, you know, the Titans last season under, their coaching staff that was not very open-minded, to say the least.
Right.
They ran a lot of, you know, kind of two wide receiver sets. They wanted to do the exotic smash mouth, whatever that was, and run the football because it's apparently still 1950. But, that didn't work out. So I think they're going to run more three wide receiver sets. There's going to be more targets for the wide receivers. Interesting guy, if that is the case, is Taywan Taylor, because they cleared out Eric Decker, who was their slot man. So Taylor can play both the slot and the outside. If they're going to run more three wide receiver sets, he's a tough one to project. You know, he's a second year guy. We've got nothing to really go off of. But do you think that's an angle into maybe a bit of a sleeper there, Peter?
Yeah, I really like Taywan Taylor. Like, I was big on him coming out. Last year was the year where I wanted to grab all the wide receivers that are going to sit and rot on my bench. that's where I was going with my draft capital last year. And Taywan Taylor was a big target for me. I really like the player coming out. He was good. Like, he did good things in the NFL, not for fantasy maybe, because you couldn't play him week to week and it wasn't worth rostering, but as a rookie coming in on a depth chart with, frankly, one of the most impressive profiles for a rookie wide receiver, Corey Davis, Rashad Matthews, who's just been continually fantastic in terms of what he does with what he gets, and with the Titans and then even Miami in that last year, and Delanie Walker sucking up infinite amount of targets, it seems like.
Walker gets targeted heavily.
Yeah, I thought all of that was positive for Taywan Taylor. But both he and Davis are going into their second year, and that article I mentioned, I put it up, I just started writing articles for fsstatistics.com. I don't know if you know that site or visit it a lot, from Madison Hayes.
Yeah, I've seen it. Some nice stuff happening there. So you guys should definitely check out FF Statistics if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah, I was just asking. They only just started putting articles on there, so I don't know if anyone knows. But there's this third-year breakout myth that wide receivers are more likely to break out in their third year. And while the third year is a good year for a wide receiver to break out, more wide receivers who have broken out since 2000 have broken out in their second year. If that sentence makes sense, what it basically means is Corey Davis is just, or Taywan Taylor for that matter, is just as likely to break out this coming season, and in fact slightly more likely to break out this coming season than the year after. And where both of their values have kind of remained stable, they're both big targets for me right now. They're entering their most likely breakout year. Like you say, the team's ramping up for what seems to at least be not an offense stuck. It wasn't even stuck in a different time. It was just stuck in something that didn't resemble an NFL offense. And Marcus Mariota's due heaps of passing touchdown regression, because he's been one of the most efficient passing touchdown players ever. And last year he was one of the least efficient. And so that should bounce back to a norm. And so it's pretty much all season, It's pretty much all green lights for the Titans offense. I like Marcus Mariota. I like Corey Davis. Taywan Taylor's a great sleeper. And Rashad Matthews, just, I don't know, you look up solid in the dictionary and there's just a picture of Rashad Matthews waving at you like, you forgot me again. Yep. But he's always good.
I got him in Scott Fishbowl. Mm-hmm. I'm drafting him in almost every best ball draft I'm doing, because it's, you're getting free touchdowns basically.
Right, yeah.
You know, you're getting him at a wide receiver three price, and he could really be a wide receiver one.
Well, yeah, if they don't break out, you've got this increased passing game with more touchdowns going around, and you've just got Rashad Matthews again standing there waving at you like, hey, I do this every year, guys. Yeah. That's got me excited about him too. Again, it's just a team I want everyone on, I guess. But yeah.
And you know, same point you just made with the Raiders is Mariota is a really nice way to get exposure to all of it. You know, if you don't want to have to guess at who's going to end up with the targets, you know, Matthews or Davis, and even, you know, what's Taylor going to siphon, or is Delaney Walker going to be able to sustain that his target share? Mariota,
you even get his rushing yards that way, and Delaney Walker, who's also getting underdrafted, I think, right now.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up because he's good for, you know, a few rushing touchdowns at least a season if his legs are healthy, which last season
we're so scared of age, but especially with tight ends. Sorry, trying to drop some of my English accent there. Especially with tight ends, you've got to consider age a good thing. They need to be older. They're the wise guy on the team that's been there forever and has seen it all, and they need to be that player to be productive. Mm-hmm. That's why they break out later. And Delaney Walker is a top five tight end that's being drafted a lot later. So, yeah, just go Titans, go, I guess.
Yeah, let's do a little speed round here to get through some of these remaining questions I have. I'll throw an offense at you with a question.
Sure.
All right, so the New Orleans Saints really reversed course last season and was pretty much a career low in attempts for Drew Brees. They ran the ball way more. They played defense for a change. Is that going to be more the case this season, or can we expect Brees to get, you know, back into the upper 500s with targets, even cross the 600 target barrier for his receivers?
Yeah, I never bet against Drew Brees. I think it's going to revert. It's such an outlier year, and he may have lost a step here or there, but he's still one of the best quarterbacks in the league, especially for fantasy. Michael Thomas' target share was the highest target share any Drew Brees wide receiver has ever had. So I think that might come down a little bit. But then you've got Cameron Meredith just waiting in the wings to suck up all the touchdowns. Yeah. Traquan Smith, I'm actually excited about as a rookie. To stop wasting your time and making your podcast run too long, I'm all about Drew Brees. I'm waiting for a team that I can say I'm not about, frankly. Sorry. I've been positive on all of them.
I would say I'm slightly skeptical that he's going to get, you know, to where he was in prior seasons, but at his price where it's at right now, he doesn't need to. He can deliver you an extremely efficient season, especially in a you know, season long redraft league. He's a really nice kind of target. He's going like QB7, QB8 range. That's a good spot to get his reliance.
Yeah, and like I say, Michael Thomas is... Yeah, I'm not going to go on. Cameron Meredith is my most owned player in Dynasty. That probably says it all.
I've come around on Cam Meredith. I don't know why I was resisting it a couple months ago. I didn't dig into it yet. And I looked under the hood and I said, yeah, this makes sense. He's a supreme athlete and he's in a good situation. I'll buy in
for a
round pick.
So, yeah. Yeah, I'm all about Drew Brees. Let that be on my tombstone, frankly.
All right, Carolina Panthers. Is Christian McCaffrey going to see over 100 targets again?
I don't know. That target share was insane. He had a wide receiver one target share last year. You know, it was crazy. I don't think he's going to get back up to that level. because I really like DJ Moore, and I think Devin Funch has proved he could be at least a capable pass-catching weapon last year, so I kind of like him too. Right now, I still have him having a target share that's more like a wide receiver than a running back, though, so I'm expecting to get around 100 targets, which is amazing for a running back.
Yeah, I think he's going to be right there. You know, Ron Rivera came out and said he wants to get him 25, 30 touches a game.
A little crazy.
A lot of people's everyone's retort to that was, I don't think Ron Rivera knows how many plays they run on average. that's probably just some coach speak. That actually worries me whenever a coach overemphasizes something. It's like, I think he actually wants to do the opposite, and he's compensating because reporters ask that. if it weren't for a change in offensive coordinator with North Turner coming in, I'd feel a little more confident in that. Even if it falls to 90 targets, which is still a very good amount for a wide receiver, it's tough for him to be, you know, that second round pick.
I think it
remains to be seen whether
he can get more running work. Obviously, he's this three down back for a second round instead of a first round price. And I really like Christian McCaffrey. He was good last year. But Greg Olsen's coming back, so he's going to suck up targets for nothing else.
Yep. All right, Arizona Cardinals. Mike McCoy is a little bit more of a West Coast style coordinator. He's, you know, I think more likely to spread the ball. Do you think Larry Fitzgerald is still going to see 150 plus targets?
150? Maybe not. But I still like him to be the target leader on the team, though. It's just, don't fear the age, man. Larry's just, he's just a different kind of animal. As wide receivers that get this productive this old tend to be. And so, I'm all about Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, every year, Larry switches from draft darling to someone that burned you the prior year. Not the last few, but there's the 2014 season he had was poor, and then he came back in 2015, was great. Maybe a little underwhelming 2016, 2017 was great again.
Fair. He struggles with consistency within a season too, and where the targets have moved around. We really don't know what the Arizona Cardinals are. I mean, like you said, they've got almost a completely new coaching staff. They've got a brand new quarterback behind a brand new quarterback. So new players on the depth chart. All we do know is that David Johnson is a phenomenal running back. We should all be drafting as running back one, and that Chad Williams might be a sleeper, and Christian Kirk's should be the rookie wide receiver too. I'm saying those as if they're facts because they're my opinions.
make your opinion fact.
Right, there you go.
All right, final toss up here. Jacksonville Jaguars. Give me a wide receiver in Jacksonville that you think is most likely to lead the team in targets.
That's a good point. Good question. I'm going to step aside from my projections here. What's most likely is that Marcus Lee leads the team in targets. But for me, it comes down to a decision. If I'm going to make a hot take call, it's Dante Moncrief and Keelan Cole, because I like both players for slightly different reasons. And because I think he's probably the least mentioned, I'll say Keelan Cole. I think Keelan Cole could be a dark horse to, if not lead the team, at least be the most fantasy-relevant wide receiver on the team, which is...
Yeah, you know, there is a little contingent out there on Twitter that are the Keelan Cole fan club. His price has risen a little bit in some of the best ball platforms as the season's gotten closer. So he is getting a little bit of love as things go. Dante Moncrief.
Right. Okay. I'll go him then.
My answer there is kind of, if I see one, floating around and I need that seventh or eighth wide receiver, any one of them could break out. And if they do, it's found value. For me, Dede Westbrook, just his skill set, his athleticism is just so tantalizing that, should Moncrief and Lee get hurt, all of a sudden Dede Westbrook becomes that target monster that we saw a couple games when everyone else was hurt again. And Maybe he starts.
Yeah, that's fair. And look, they're all relying on Blake Bortles and the team that desperately does not want to throw the ball. So I mean, and the reason there are generally four.
Yeah, but I agree with you. Most likely to happen, Marquise Lee leads the team with about 100 points.
Stop talking.
All right, so you know, we touched on Kenny Golladay. You know, I think we gave some pretty valid reasons on him. The 14th round, I'm definitely good with taking him in the 14th round. You know, if our friend Halal from Twitter is in your league, you're not even going to see him in the 14th round. But you know, most people I think are he's just a wide receiver three to them, and they're not interested in bumping him up at all. So even in the 13th round, I'm happy to grab him.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry.
Are you on board with taking him with that kind of draft capital?
Yeah, I mean, anyone in that range, you're either, depending on how you structured the team, you're either just looking for someone who might produce for a couple weeks solidly, or you're looking for someone with all the upside in the world. And so I definitely think that's in the right range.
Right. All right, Peter, let's wrap things up with a sleeper each. As the guest, I'll give you the honors. Go ahead and give me somebody you like as a late round guy that could help win a league for someone.
Yeah. You know, I spent so much time talking about all these deeper players as we went through the teams. I spoke over the guy I was going to use. So I'm struggling for another one. Because Cameron Meredith is a guy I've been drafting late pretty much in every league, as I mentioned. But I think... already mentioned him again.
I think he's a great one. Roll with him. Give us your pitch on.
It's him or Chad Williams, dude. Cameron Meredith.
I'd much rather be attached to the Saints offense than the Cardinals.
Yeah. I mean, he's got Drew Brees. The wide receiver two on that team has averaged like 159 fantasy points throughout the lifetime of Drew Brees' career. And last year was, like you said, just a low production in the passing game, which I don't expect to be so low going into 2017. I just think Drew Brees is going to get more pass attempts than that. And when he throws the ball, good things happen. Cameron Meredith, someone that's been not overlooked. I mean, like you say, there's always a community somewhere that remembers, like Hillshore Farms, I remember when. That one year where he had to be the leader for the Bears, and he was the target leader. He was a good touchdown producer. He was a good producer in college. He's someone I watched when he came into the league as well, because I just liked his production from the college level. And beyond that, you said you like athleticism. He's a really good athlete, especially for his size. He's led a team in targets before and produced at that level. And he just suffered that traumatic-looking knee injury in the preseason that was horrific, but if he's back to health, I like that guy getting targets from Drew Brees. It's just locked in value, I think.
Yeah, you know, that was really what sold me on him is once he started gaining buzz this offseason, people saying he was ahead of schedule with the recovery, I said, all right, let me research this guy a little more, because I just remember him being on the Browns and that offense was pretty much worthless.
Right.
But yeah, I saw he was, you know, plus athlete, great speed, but with size. So he seems to have a knack for the slot, and Drew Brees loves reliable pass catchers.
Like, sometimes you don't have to make it harder. It sounds like such a cop-out to say Drew Brees, Drew Brees, Drew Brees. But I mean, it's Drew Brees. Sometimes I don't want to make it harder for myself than it has to be, you know, and...
Yeah, I mean, he's made a lot of receivers that go to other teams and turn into nothing at all. So.
Exactly. I mean, I actually like Kenny Stills, but he made Kenny Stills relevant for a little while there. And then, he's just a different kind of cat.
Yeah. All right. So for me, you know, maybe it's just because he was showing off a little bit in practice today, the Ravens open training camp, and Joe Flacco immediately started connecting with John Brown deep downfield. You know, we all know Flacco has a pretty big arm. He seems to be over the back issue that he came into last season with Flacco. Mm-hmm. That is, John Brown, indications are, you know, he's back to full health. We'll see if that lasts. You know, sickle cell trait is a very tricky thing to manage, but you know, the who knows what their play calling is going to be like. But if Brown is indeed getting some of the deep targets that the Ravens have shown an affinity for in the past, yeah, he's a really hard guy to cover. He's super fast.
Are you hoping Lamar Jackson gets under center for that? Or do you think it can happen with Flacco? Just out of interest.
I think it can happen with Flacco. He's, you know, he's supported some deep target receivers in the past, and they actually run, you know, more plays. This was something I was really surprised with digging into when I started doing projections this offseason. You know, Baltimore has run over 1,000 plays the past three seasons. And, you know, last year they ran the ball a lot more. They found Alex Collins, and that was a little bit of a recipe for success. But, you know, the past 3 years they ran 1056, 1045, 1025 plays, and those are near league highs. So
yeah, right. I think they were seventh in the league in passing attempts last year or something like that. I saw a tweet somewhere.
Yeah, so you know, in my head, the Ravens are just this, you know, AFC North grinded out football team that wants to play smash nose football, and they actually do pass it some. So I think the opportunity's there to hook up, and you know, he's not going to be a week in and week out guy like we had all hoped, but I think he could, especially in a best ball as a final pick, because nobody's drafting him. He could be a guy that
and who doesn't. Sorry, man. I'm excited. I really like that pick. Who doesn't want to see Smokey Brown dancing in the end zone again? That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So that's my guy. Very, you know, very late sleeper. Even if he's a bench stash and redraft, you know, maybe he starts breaking out and he's a bye week fill-in. That's an easy decision for you.
There you go. But
that's what we got time for tonight, Peter. Tell everybody one more time where they can find you on Twitter and what you're working on right now.
All right. Yeah, my name's Peter Howard. You can find me on Twitter at PA Howdy, where I'm pretty much there constantly. I host or co-host the Dynasty Crossroads podcast. I write for DLF Football, FF Statistics, Player Profiler, and anyone else will have me, to be honest with you. But the DLF's my home base. Thanks for letting me come on, man. I don't know I got the chance to thank you there. I really appreciate you asking me, even if it was just as a last-minute fill-in. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, glad to have you on, Peter. Hoping people check out your work because it's definitely worthwhile. But yeah, that's what we got time for, guys. Thanks again, Peter, and may the sports be with you.